Mary, and we will see you next week. Have a good week, and stay tuned for So What's Your Story?
Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch signals Thursday, 8 p.m. in time for So What's Your Story. We're the only program originating in Houston devoted to live storytelling, and we're right here on listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 FM Houston. I'm Warren Holloman. Tonight I'll be your host, and each week Hank, Greg, Mary, Tatiana, and I, along with our extended family of guest hosts, celebrate the power of story by bringing you remarkable tellers who take us on captivating journeys and then bring us safely home. The reason we're able to take you on these journeys is because of your generous support. Tonight we're wrapping up KPFT Summer Mini Fun Drive, and we need you to show the station that you support So What's Your Story. It's easy. Call 713-526-5738. Even a small donation makes a big difference. We'll thank you on the air unless you say otherwise. And the best time to call is right now. It only takes 90 seconds, and if you call now, you won't miss a single story. Is that right, Hank?
That's absolutely right, Warren. It only takes 90.1 second, actually, to give us a call. But, you know, for those people who don't know us, we started out as an open journal in 2008. And I was told at the time that, you know what, if you want to do a program, that's fine, but I don't know if people are going to really get into storytelling. Well, obviously, not only did we do very well, but, you know, people would call in all the time, Warren, and they would say, you know what, Hank, we want this more than once a month. So we went weekly. We started off 6 o'clock on a Monday morning, and believe it or not, did really well until we ended up Thursday at 10 and then Wednesday at 10. And then right now at this coveted spot, right in the enviable position where we're between Wally James and the Progressive Forum and Lars and the Tennyson Tape Deck. And we are in a position now where we are magnifying our seed of storytelling in the city, because we really are the seed of storytelling in a hub which Houston has become. So we're very, very proud of that. And we need people to help us stay that way. And they can if they give us a call at 713-526-5738, JAMKPFT, or go online to www.kpft.org and then to donations, and then tell us how you want to pay. Don't use my credit card, but tell us how you want to pay. And then please scroll to So What's Your Story as the show that you designate for your support. And we're hoping that we get some calls coming in, and I hope some have something very positive to report in just a little while. We had a great week last week, by the way.
And tonight, storytellers Ariana Rose and Sally Bates Goodrow. Ariana tells personal stories that combine humor and passion and a deep thirst for meaning. I met her at the Moth, where she's kind of a celebrity. One of her stories went viral, and it's had at least 24 million viewers so far, according to the Houston Chronicle. I've talked to people who've told me that that story changed their life, and that taught me an important lesson. If you want to change the world, you can do it one story at a time. My other guest, Sally Bates Goodrow, tells folk tales, children's stories, Pourquoi stories, trickster stories, all kinds of traditional stories. According to my calculations, Sally has been on this show at least 8 times, which may very well be a record. I met Sally through the Houston Storytellers Guild, where she currently serves as an officer and a board member. Ariana, Sally, welcome to So What's Your Story?
Thank you so much. Thank you for having us.
We're delighted you're here. Ariana, your first story is about a summer vacation. That's certainly a fitting topic for this time of year, but yours is not one of those light, fun-in-the-sun types of stories. Tell us your story.
So my story starts, I guess the first thing that I want to think of, that I want to say is what if thoughts came back to us? What if thoughts really mattered and had an impact about what happens around us? What if they transcend time and space to meet us again? So as I tell the story, I do want to admit that I'm feeling extremely vulnerable because I am going to show a part of me that perhaps people don't like to show. It's something very hard about me that happened in the past, but it's necessary in order to understand the story. I was 16 years old and my parents had welcomed a family into our home. They were moving into Houston, and so my parents wanted to get them started. They had a little boy that was about one and a half years old, and he had the same age as my brother Leo. I loved my brother, and I was, I was jealous of this little boy. I had difficulty accepting him into the home, and I had difficulty with his presence. One day I was in my bedroom, and I was ironing, and as I was ironing, the little boy came in the bedroom, and behind him was his mom. There were several members of the family in the bedroom, and I continued to iron, and he started to touch everything. And at that moment, I had a very, very cruel thought. I finished ironing, I closed the table, I wrapped the cord around the iron, and as I would usually do it, I took the iron, I put it on the floor against the wall in a corner. In order to feel freed from the guilt and the shame that I was feeling from that acute awareness of having a cruel thought, I said to the mother, "Please be careful. The iron's very hot. He can get burned." Mm-hmm. Sure enough, a few minutes later, he managed to get too close to the iron, and he fell on, and the iron fell on his little foot, and he was burned. Mm-hmm. For about a hundredth of a second, I was content. Until I saw his little face, and then I was slapped into the reality. And I felt such deep shame, and I said to myself, be careful with your thoughts. You don't have a right to let your mind wander like this. Control yourself because you can hurt someone. So inwardly, from that moment on, there was a turning point because I honestly tried to control my thoughts, especially when I was angry. So I'm going to fast forward to 15 years later. I lived in France and I was on vacation with my children and my ex-husband. We used to love having huge bowls of chocolate with croissant for breakfast. And my husband would get fresh milk from the cow, and then we would make the milk boil until it would bubble over. We used to have an au pair. She was very, very young to assist us with our children. One day when the milk was starting to boil, my husband turned around and he poured the milk into the bowls that were set on the table. And my son, Andreas, who was 7 months old at that time, sat on the nanny's lap, and he was flapping his little arms. And when my husband poured the milk, he flapped his little arms and he pushed himself forward on the table, and his little arm hit the bowl. The bowl went up and the boiling milk fell on his arm. At that moment, I ran to him and I took off his little PJ very, very, very slowly. Thank God he had a PJ on cotton, because if it was polyester, it would have stuck to his skin. But when I took off the PJ, his little skin just popped open. It just erupted and opened as if you, I don't know if you've ever done any canning with tomatoes and you see the skin just pops open, and his little skin just opened up and went back. I took him, we called the ambulance. We took him to the hospital. While he was in the car, I had him in my arms and he was just screaming. And I had no time to be emotional. I couldn't allow myself to be emotional. I had to just focus on him. And I looked at him and I had my eyes on him and I just look at me. And I'm sure that he couldn't understand why. Why can't she do anything about this? But we couldn't do anything about it. I just looked at him. We waited for the doctor to arrive. There were 5 and 6 nurses holding him down. And he would just implore me. And I just said with love, just look at me. Focus your eyes on me. I will walk with this. I will walk through you with you through this. It's going to be okay. I will be with you. It seemed like an eternity until the doctor arrived. And what they had to do was they would have to cut the skin that had turned back while they were holding him down. And his screams were such, and I would not allow myself to cry one single tear. I would just look at him. And at that moment, I thought, oh, dear God, what wouldn't I give to be in his place? I would gladly give my 2 arms to be burnt. I would gladly give my 2 arms. And as clearly as crystal, I heard a voice that said, that would be too easy, wouldn't it? And I was like shocked, like, what? And I looked at my son. And as God is my witness, I did not see the face of my son, but the face of a child that I had known 15 years before. At that moment, the farthest corners of my being were inundated with guilt, with shame, with pain, with deep awareness. And I was overwhelmed. For 45 days, every time they changed his bandages, his screams dictated in my heart a new reality that I just could not ignore. Because whether it was law or whether it was coincidence, the synchronicity of events that had come together had met me at the perfect time of space and time to tell me that maybe, just maybe, thoughts could affect what was happening today. And then I thought, wow, if thoughts could affect matter, if thoughts could come back, if thoughts are the building blocks of dreams, of desires, of what I had desired, if in fact thoughts are the building blocks of reality, then I have every reason to master my thoughts. And if through mastered thought, I can affect those around me today and in the future, then I have everything to gain. And so I believed. And from that moment on, what thoughts I began to believe. Because, it's kind of like John Lennon said, you may think that I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. He's not. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. If you're just tuning in, this is So What's Your Story on 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. You can catch us at 89.5 in Galveston and 91.9 in Huntsville and online at www.kpft.org. You've just heard a story by Ariana Rose, a master of telling personal narratives. My next guest, Sally Bates Goodrow, is a master of the more traditional storytelling genres. Sally, your first story is one that will that may be familiar to many of our listeners. It's one that touches on some of the same themes depicted in Ariana's story. Tell us your story.
Well, this story is from a picture book by Audrey Wood, but it's originally from a narrative that was a children's game back in England, and they took that rhyme, that game, and they made a story of it. And I do have permission from Audrey Wood to tell the story. It's called Heggity Peg. Well, there once was a woman who was a widow, and she had 7 children. Their names were Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and you can guess Saturday and Sunday. One day, the widow had to go to the market. And so she gathered her children to her and she said, "You have been so good this week and have helped me so much that I will bring each of you a treat from the market. You must tell me what you want." And so Monday asked for a tub of butter. Tuesday asked for a pocket knife. Wednesday asked for a pitcher. Thursday asked for a pot of honey. Friday asked for a paper of salt. Saturday asked for some crackers. And Sunday asked for an egg pudding. "Very well, my children," she said. "Now I am going to leave, but make sure that you do not open the door. You do not let anyone in. And make sure that you do not touch the fire." All of her children said, "Of course, Mother, we will not do those things." And so she went off. But as soon as she was out of sight, Heggity Peg, who had heard everything and was hiding in the shadows, came up to the door of the cottage. She was pulling a little cart behind her, and she held her pipe in her fist. She took her pipe and she rapped it against the door. And she said, "Children, let me in so I may light my pipe." And they called to her through the window, and they said, "No, no, we may not let you in, for our mother has said we cannot, and we cannot light your pipe because we cannot touch fire." "Ah, but children, if you let me in to light my pipe, I will give you the sack of gold that is in my cart." Well, sure enough, the children looked out of the window, and they saw in the cart was a sack full of gleaming gold pieces, and they thought, "Oh, how our mother would be so pleased to have this sack of gold." And so they flung open the door and they let Heggity Peg in. They ran to the fire and lit straws to help her light her pipe. But as soon as she had lit her pipe with the straw, a cloud of smoke filled the entire room, and she called out, "Now I've got you." And when the smoke cleared, each of the children had turned into a kind of food. She gathered up all the food, she loaded up her cart, and she trundled her way through the village and over the bridge into the woods where she lived in a small cottage. Well, meanwhile, the children's mother came back from the market only to find the door flung wide open and none of her children in sight. She called their names, but no one answered. Just then a bird who was sitting on the lintel of the door called out, "It's Heggity Peg. She's stolen your children. You may follow me." And so she followed the bird, still with the basket on her arm, from the market. And she followed the bird through the village and over the bridge and into the woods to Heggity Peg's house. And when she got there, she pounded on the door and she said, "Let me in and give me back my children." Heggity Peg knew who was outside. She said, "You cannot come in. Your shoes are dirty." "I will take them off," said the widow. She took off her shoes and flung them into the bushes. She pounded on the door and she said, "Let me in and give me back my children." Heggity Peg said, "You cannot come in. Your socks are dirty." "I will take them off," said the widow, and she took off her socks and flung them after the shoes. And she pounded on the door and she said, "Let me in and give me back my children." And Heggity Peg said, "You cannot come in, for your feet are dirty." And the widow said, "I will cut them off." And she got down on her knees and she arranged her skirts around her legs so it looked like she had cut off her feet. And then she pounded on the door again and she said, "Let me in and give me my children." And Heggity Peg had to let her in. But once she had come inside, Haggerty Peg said, I will give you your children, but you must tell me which food is which child to get them back. Well, the poor widow, she looked at all the food spread out on the table. She said, how will I know which food is which child? Oh, my poor dears. She looked at the basket on her arm and she said, now you will never have the treats that I brought home for you. But that gave her an idea. She said, perhaps I may know my children by the treats that they asked for. Monday asked for butter. Bread wants butter. Monday must be the bread. Tuesday asked for a knife. Pie wants knife. The pie is Tuesday. Wednesday asked for a pitcher. Pitcher wants milk. The milk must be Wednesday. And so it went on. The Thursday asked for honey. Porridge wants honey. Porridge was Thursday. Fish wants salt. Friday wanted salt. Fish must be Friday. Cheese wants crackers. Saturday wanted crackers. Therefore, cheese was Saturday. And as for the egg pudding that Sunday wanted, it only would go with a roast beef. And as she said, Sunday is the roast beef. And as that last word came out of her mouth, all of her children turned back into themselves. They ran to their mother. They flung their arms around her. And they hugged her tight. But then she turned on Haggerty Peg. She said, you will pay for what you have done. And she began to chase Haggerty Peg through the woods. Haggerty Peg ran as best she could. And she made it to the bridge. But they cornered her upon the bridge. And to get away, she leaped into the water and the current swept her away so that no one ever saw Haggerty Peg after that day. But as for the widow and her children, they spent some of that gold, they shared the rest, and they all lived happily ever after.
That's got to be one of Grimm's fairy tales, right?
Well, it does sound very Grimm-like, doesn't it? especially with the cutting off of limbs, which is often in Grimm's stories.
Yeah, his wonderful children's stories.
Yeah. Lovely, gory stories that, well, you know, Grimm's stories actually didn't start out as children's stories, and some of them still aren't. So, yes.
Right. That's a common misperception, I suppose. But So tell us about the history of this story. If it's not one of Grimm's stories, where does it come from?
Well, there's a children's game, and I actually did some research on it and taught some kids how to play it. It's kind of one of those, what's that game, Mother, Won't You Come Over kind of games. And one person is playing the Haggerty Peg character, and then she has the kids come over, and they have to get past her. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit different, obviously, than the story, but they took that rhyme and they put it in. I think they really liked Audrey and Don Wood. They really liked the Haggerty Peg. And in the actual picture book, it says Haggerty Peg, she's lost her leg. And that's part of the game. Mm-hmm.
So when you tell the story to children, what type of reactions do you get?
I think they really like it. Kids like stories with drama, and they like stories with danger. I think we're a little bit too careful of kids these days. They need to vicariously experience some of that so that they feel safer. And they know that adults in their lives, like the mother, is going to protect them.
Right. Mm. So we're kind of helicopter storyteller parents or whatever.
Well, you know,
we protect them a little too much.
There's a huge debate about political correctness, and I think that storytelling is part of that debate. We could talk about it for hours, I think.
Yeah. Well, I just am struck by the juxtaposition of these two powerful stories, but one comes from experience and memory and putting two experiences that were far apart in her life together into one story. Mm-hmm. Yours comes from the creative mind of a creative writer. But probably somewhere in her experience as well. But some of the themes are so similar, and some of the emotions and some of the fears. And so I guess if it's Ariana, what was it like for you to listen to that story, and did it amplify your story in any way?
It definitely confirms the mother is willing to do
anything and everything to come to the child's comfort and well-being.
In your arms. Mm.
You were willing to give your arms. That was your parental thought. And then this mother was, I guess, at least challenged to give up her legs or her feet.
Right.
Yeah. So the mother's willing to sacrifice for her child, the deep fear of every... I think more of the fear that every parent has that something will go wrong with your children, because it's hard to get through, you know, 20 years of raising a child without something going wrong.
In France, we say small children, small problems, big children, big problems.
Yes,
this is true.
It's 20. It's like their whole life. We worry.
Right. And then there's another thing that's, and it's a really grim thing, but since you brought it up, there are bad people out there who would do harm to our children. In your story, at least, Sally, there's this character who wants to harm the children. I mean, it's not a mere accident. It's an intentional harm.
Well, there's all sorts of symbolism, I think, in most of the stories that last a long time. You know, folk tales are really stories that have just lasted through time, and they have a lot of wisdom in them, and they have a lot of our deepest fears and our deepest hopes are in folk tales, which is one reason that I like them. But yeah, and the kind of symbolism of that evil, you know, even though we might not meet somebody like that really, but it's out there in some form.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything else y'all want to add before we? Okay. Well, this is So What's Your Story, 90.1 FM KPFT. My guests are Sally Bates Goodrow and Ariana Rose. Let's check back in with Hank at Pledge Central. How are we doing, Hank?
Well, I have to tell you, first of all, these are marvelous stories. I know that a little bit later, Warren, you wanted to talk about some of the connections. But,
we can talk some now, too.
No, that's all right. I just wanted to say that one of the things that I love about Ariana's storytelling style is that she really does demonstrate the greatest human common denominator, and that's vulnerability. I know it's something that you talked about, Ariana, but vulnerability is so beautiful. But, you know, I'm struck by the similarities that stem from exaggeration, folk tales, the cricket jumps a little bit higher, the pot of gold's a little bit heavier, and the witch is a little more wicked. And we exaggerate things in personal stories in order to amplify things as well, not unlike a good stereo system where we want to heighten the intensity. And that's what I notice in both of these stories, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
And let's not forget about the absolute lessons. You know, I know that if both of these wonderful storytellers were asked, what is the most important lesson that you want listeners to take from your stories, they would have to be very explicit. They would have to be, because there are so many. In any event, I don't mean to digress. As far as
to compliment Sally for not saying that what was obvious, I guess, the lesson of her story is obey your mother, stupid kids.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, you're right.
Yes, but then there wouldn't be a story if I obey her.
Yeah. I mean, just saying listen to your mother is hardly... It's hardly a story. I mean, who wants to hear that? Tatiana doesn't. She's giving me you know, as far as calls, we don't have any calls coming in yet, but the night is young, although it'll be getting old in about 25 minutes.
Yeah.
But we do need to thank Eric, Georgia, and Paul for their generous donations that came in after last week's program. So please, too, give us a call. One of our steadfast volunteers is standing by at 713-526-5738, or you can come by 419 Lovett, and Tatiana will tell you a story, right? Will you do that? No, not really. Okay.
Well,
just thought I'd check. Give us a call, please, 713-526-5738, JAM KPFT.
We're all things storytelling here on So What's Your Story, and not only do we bring you great stories, but we also keep you up to date on what's happening in the world of storytelling here in Houston and all over Texas. Tatiana?
Well, if you like storytelling, then you'll love our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild. The Guild hosts the Story Swap the fourth Tuesdays of the month at Temple Emmanuel across from Rice University. The next swap will be Tuesday, August 27th at 7 p.m., and it's a great place to meet other storytellers, hear stories, or try out a story of your own. And you'll see lots of familiar, friendly faces there, including Hank and Sally, who are here in the studio with us tonight. Everything you need to know about the Houston Storytellers Guild is on their website, www.houstonstorytellers.org. And we love the Houston Storytellers so much that next week we're dedicating the entire show to them. Hank is hosting, and his guests will be three veteran tellers from the Guild: Alan Gardner Atkinson, Michael Winters, and Sheila Starks Phillips. Three gems from the world of telling, and it's only heard right here on KPFT 90.1 Houston. The Guild is definitely one of the most happening places in the Houston storytelling scene, but they're not the only game in town. There's also The Moth. Houston Public Media presents Houston Moth host Story Slams the second Tuesday of every month at Warehouse Live. You'll hear real people tell true stories about moments that changed their lives. And of course, the other happening place in the Houston storytelling scene is right here on So What's Your Story. We've been bringing you live storytelling on the air since 2008. That's hundreds and hundreds of shows, and they're all archived on the Houston Storytellers Guild website. Just click on the Radio Programs tab, and you'll be in story heaven. And as for future shows, if you have any program ideas or storytelling suggestions, shoot us an email at story@kpft.org, and I promise we will get back to you. And check us out on Facebook, too. Check out our Facebook page, where you can see all of our hosts, our storytellers, and find out about past and future shows. Even watch us right now on Facebook Live. And please, don't forget to like us when you leave. Warren?
Welcome back to the second half of our show. More stories from Sally Bates Goodrow and Ariana Rose. Ariana, your first story was about an accident. Actually, two accidents. And so is your second story. But I'm sensing, since I've heard this one before, I heard it about 3 years ago. I still remember it vividly. I'm sensing this one is a little lighter and a little less scary.
True. But it's also about thoughts that matter.
Ah, tell us your story.
Okay. So, yes, this happened in 2016. Uh-huh. So I was invited to a secret full moon fairy gathering.
Whoa.
Now, I've been to full moon drumming circles, but I had never been to a fairy gathering. So I thought, okay, why not? I'm game. I had worked all day. I had not had lunch. At about 5 o'clock, I just said, okay, I need a break. So I decided to go home. I put on my fairy dress, my petticoat, my fairy glitter, my sharky socks. I had Winnie the Pooh underwears to dance under the full moon until midnight.
A good story always has detail. Thank you.
Hey, I had wings. I was in Never Never Land. We met at Tinsley Park, and all the fairy princes and princesses were gathered. We were all having fun, and as we headed to our secret meeting spot, there was a huge, huge slide. And I thought, oh, why walk when we can slide? So the fairy prince that was with me, I'm going to call them by their names, see if they're listening. We'll hear them. Fairy Prince Tom goes down. Now, he had his hands up and his feet up. So he went all the way down, and I went right behind him, just full blast. And when I was going down, I had my feet in front of me. So there was a hole at the bottom of the slide. And when he gets to the bottom of the slide, he just jumps up in the air. But when I got to the bottom, my foot went into the hole and my body kept going.
Oh, no.
And all I could hear was the big twist. So I just said, oh, quick. Take off my boot. Take off my sock. I think that I broke my ankle or my foot or whatever. So Fairy Prince Tom takes off my boot, all the princes and princesses come running and gathering all around me, you know, and I am in excruciating pain right at that moment. And so one of the fairy princesses, Jessica, says, I've heard that when an Aborigine breaks his bones, everyone gathers around him and chants and sings to him to restore his bones. And she just starts singing away. Okay. A fairy guy behind me goes, "We need to go to the hospital and get some x-rays." Then this totally wild fairy Arjuna says, "I read that sometimes fairies ask for sacrifice before they start. The channeling can be very powerful." Mind you, I don't even know what a channeling fairy is, but okay. I am beside myself. All I can think of is breathe. That's all I can think of. I couldn't even talk. All I could do was concentrate on the breathing. So then while the beautiful fairy is singing, she goes, "Come on, you guys. We need dancers, too, if you're serious about this. And if you believe, you can't be hypocritical." Two fairies start dancing, and one of them starts playing the flute. And I'm desperately trying to focus on my breath. The pain is unbearable. The fairy guy behind me says, now the fairy guy is Harwood, the other storyteller, by the way.
Harwood Taylor.
He says, "We need to go to the hospital." And the fairy prince, who has just taken off my boot, Tom, and is holding onto my foot like Cinderella, he looks at me and he says, "Is this what you want to do?" And I don't know what I want to do. All I know is that I want to be able to breathe because I am in so much pain. So then he comes back. And then one of the girls, I think it's Fairy Princess Mary, she says, "The prince needs some cold. I'm going to go get some ice packs." So she takes off. I'm continuing, trying to breathe. The totally wild Arjuna comes back and he says, "Oh, look, there's some sand. It's wet and cold. Let's bury her foot in the sand. If we can hold her down for 10 minutes, the channeling can be very, very powerful." And before anybody starts touching me, the fairy prince Tom, holding my foot, says, "Is this what you want?" I can't even breathe. It's cold. I say, "Yes, I don't care. Just do whatever you want." So they start putting my foot in the sand, and I'm just like, I can't breathe anymore. I can't. There's so much pain. The fairy guy, Harwood, behind me says, "The fairy needs an x-ray." And at that moment, I'm like, I'm losing it. I'm thinking, oh my God, we're just a few miles away from the biggest medical center in the whole world. I'd love to be an Aborigine. I'd love to be a fairy. But we're just a bunch of eccentric urban hippies. If I could just hold for 3 hours so I don't have to screw up this fairy evening. But let's just go to the hospital. Yes. So they take me up the slide, and when I'm all the way at the top, this floating, etherical sherry fairy comes up to me, and she gives me a kiss and hugs me, and she goes, "Thank you for taking care of yourself." Oh, my God. We get into the car, so there's two cars. Four of us are in one car. The fairy prince Tom is still holding my foot up because it hurts less. And so may his soul rest in peace. He says, "Give me your right hand." And he squeezes it real loud, real hard. And then he says to Fairy Tom, "Take her left hand." And he goes, "Every time we squeeze your hand, I want you to focus on the squeeze." So he goes, "Right, squeeze, left, squeeze, right, squeeze." And I'm like trying to focus real hard on the squeeze. Suddenly he pulls a strand of my hair in the middle and he goes, "Hair, left, right, hair, left, right, hair." And I'm thinking, what is going on? This is like the craziest thing in the world. And I'm like, I can't even breathe. And I'm just, okay, wait. Let me just concentrate. I have been meditating for 20 years of my life. I should have learned something. I mean, I must have learned something. So I just decided to block out everything. And I just closed my eyes. And I started to like do like a cocoon, you know, like weaving like light. And in less than 3 seconds, I literally felt this light come from the right side of my feet, just go all the way up and down and up and down. And I had no more pain, absolutely no more pain. So I say, "Hey, you guys, I've got no more pain." And then Tom, he says, "Huh?" And everybody's like, "What?" And I says, "I have no more pain. I'm serious. I have no more pain." And then I start thinking of the night and what everybody said to me. And I'm just thinking of the delirium of the whole thing. And I just start laughing.
and laughing. And I'm laughing and laughing and laughing all the way to the hospital. And when we get to the hospital, the nurse comes out with a wheelchair, and I just stand up. My foot is twice as big as the other, but I feel absolutely no pain. I just hop on the chair, and there we go. And so the nurse says, okay, so tell me what happened. And of course, I mean, like, well, I was going down a slide. And of course, I mean, this is like too much. We go inside. And then the fairy prince, Tom, says, date of birth, real loud. And it's like, oh, God, I just want to say, like, October 16, 2010. But no, I'm from the 1950s, you know. So this is really, really embarrassing. I'm just like, oh, Earth, open up, please, you know. So they take me into the room. They call the doctor and they say, well, you know, you don't have any pain, I hear. I says, no, I've got no pain at all. He says, can I touch it? And I go, yeah, sure. So he touches it. He turns it around, right, left. And he goes, you've got no pain. He says, can I take an x-ray? He goes, yeah. So they put the bags on me and the whole thing. And I feel no pain whatsoever. And so then they start, putting the bandages and all this stuff. And then the nurse says, you don't have any pain? And I go, no, I don't take drugs. I don't smoke. I'm enough to myself. I don't do anything. She goes, I just can't believe this. She goes, honey, you are one tough lady. I have been doing this for many, many, many years, and I have never seen this. And I said, honey, I have been meditating for many, many, many years. It's not Aborigine. It's not fairy. It's not conventional medicine. This is my delirium. And so what I can say is that if you're ever invited to a full moon secret fairy gathering, once more, be careful what you wish for. As for me, I got me my big fat break from work.
Oh, my. What was it like for you to tell the story now, 3 years later? Because the first time I heard you tell it, I think it was only a few weeks after you had broken your ankle.
Yeah, it had been about a week or two. It was so fresh.
And you were in a wheelchair.
Yes. I still laughed when I was trying to remember. I was actually laughing. I think that it's the most happiest accident. I think that I was maybe meant to have this accident because I wished it so much to have a break from work. I was off for 6 weeks and had surgery and the whole thing. So I really, you know, think that thoughts matter. But what was awesome about it was that it happened in the best conditions possible. I was surrounded by my friends that loved me, my friends, my princes and princesses who took care of me. And just carried me. Tom carried me up and down the stairs. And they took me to the hospital. They took me to the car. They to the visits, to the doctor, everything. And I couldn't have been more blessed while having a broken foot. It was just wonderful. So I still laugh, and I'm very grateful for that.
Gee, I'm feeling a little guilty for saying this was such a lighthearted story, because that's I remembered the humor and your gratitude, your perspective, but actually I realized you went through a lot of pain. So thank you for sharing your pain with us and how you dealt with it.
Thank you.
Sally, now for your second story. Your first story was a contemporary story, but one that was written, I think, in the style of a traditional folk story. The next story is a truly traditional story in a special genre of traditional stories, I believe, known as a Pourquoi story. Could you tell our listeners what a Pourquoi story is?
Sure. Well, as as we know, Pourquoi means why in French. And it is a story that explains how things came to be. There are a lot of folk tales that explain why the sky is far away, or why that mountain is there and not somewhere else, or why those stones are here, or why an animal looks like this and not like that. So it's that kind of story. Yeah.
And yours is an Anansi Pourquoi story. What does Anansi mean?
There are lots of stories from West Africa that are Anansi stories. Anansi is a trickster character. He's like Coyote in Native American stories, or Gluskappe in some other Native American stories, or sometimes Rabbit in Cherokee stories. So he is one of those characters that represents sort of the extreme in human behavior. So there are lots of wonderful stories about Anansi.
So this is a great teaching story for our listeners, too, because it combines the trickster motif with the Pourquoi genre, I guess. So tell us your story.
Sure. Sure. This is the story of I won't tell you the end. I'll just tell you the story. Now, Anansi the spider, he hates to work. And he would rather do anything than work. So one year he realized that while everyone else had been working in their gardens all summer long, he had let his go completely to weeds, and so he had no food for his family to eat all winter. So being Anansi, he didn't feel sorry about this at all. He just looked around and found that Lizard had a garden that was full of vegetables, and so Anansi decided that he would trick Lizard out of his garden. So he called his children to him at night, and he lined them all up in a row, and they walked from Anansi's house out of the village to the gardens, to Lizard's garden. Then they turned around and walked home. Then they walked back and forth and back and forth and back and forth until they had trodden a path in the grass from Anansi's house to Lizard's garden. The next morning, Anansi got up, took his basket, went out to Lizard's garden, and started harvesting Lizard's vegetables. Well, when Lizard arrived, he was furious. He said, "What are you doing in my garden? Why are you taking my vegetables?" Anansi said, "Your garden. This is my garden, and these are my vegetables." Well, Lizard was so furious, he immediately went to the village, brought the chief back to render a judgment. Well, the chief looked at the path from Anansi's house. He said, "If this is your garden, Lizard, then where's the path from your house?" Well, Lizard said, I never go the same way twice. Sometimes I go over the grass, and sometimes I go through the grass. That's why there is no path." Said the chief, "I only see that there is a path from Anansi's house to the garden. Therefore, the garden is Anansi's." Well, Lizard was furious and decided that there was a way he would get his garden and his vegetables back again. So while Anansi and his children were harvesting Lizard's vegetables, Lizard went to his house and sat in front of it and caught flies with his sticky tongue. But he left them alive, and he strung them all together to make a kind of a cloth, all of flies, if you can imagine that. It was quite lovely, because when the sun shone on it, all the iridescent colors in the flies' wings shone, and they gave out a little hum, and it just went up and down. And Lizard put that cloth on his shoulders like a cloak, and he went into the village, and everybody wanted it. But he would not give it to anybody until Anansi came and said, "Oh, such elegance is only for me. What will you give me? What will you take for that cloak?" And Lizard says, "Oh, you have taken away all my vegetables. You must give me enough vegetables to fill the hole behind my house." Well, Anansi looked at the hole. It looked quite small. Surely just one basket of vegetables would fill it. He did not know that Lizard had made the hole much deeper and bigger underneath. It just looked small from the top. So he said, "It is a bargain." So he went and got some vegetables, put them in the hole, but the hole was not filled. And after he had taken all of Lizard's vegetables from his storehouse and this hole was still not full, he said to Lizard, "There must be something I can do to keep my end of the bargain, because it is very important to keep your end of the bargain." And Lizard said, "Well, I will give you this cloak if you will give me back my garden." Well, Anansi said, "Very well," because he had made a deal. He reached out for the cloak, but just then a little bit of wind came and lifted that cloak up off the ground, and all of the flies began to flicker their wings, and that cloak flew away. Well, Anansi went running after it, but he couldn't catch it, and so he was left as he had begun, with nothing. So, you know, the story is true, because Anansi, the spider is still trying to make a cloak like the one that he lost. He catches flies in his web, but he is greedy, and he eats them before he has enough.
Oh. So where do you think that story comes from? I mean, is that from children asking their parents a question about something, or?
Oh, gosh. I think it's partly because if you look at a web and you see the flies in it, it gives you the idea of a cloak. But I also think it's from just the idea of so wanting to get something for nothing. and what could happen from that. But yeah, I don't really know about the creativity that went into it, but I do appreciate it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking, pourquoi? You know how children always ask you as a parent, why this? Why? You answer, but why?
That's true.
And I just wonder if that's sort of where that comes from. What is it about the story that speaks to you?
Oh, I love some of the images in the story. And I like how Lizard gets his revenge. And but I just think Anansi is so extreme. You just got to love him. I just love all the Anansi stories.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Hank tells me he's got a Pourquoi story that kind of builds on this one. So we're going to bring Hank in for another Pourquoi story. Hank?
Well, thank you. First of all, we want to thank Peggy for a very generous donation. Thank you, Peggy.
Thank you, Peggy.
I think I know her. I don't know. I think I do. Okay. Well, you're supposed to ask me, why does the why do the rabbits wiggle their noses? Anybody want to ask me that?
Why do the rabbits wiggle their noses?
It's so good that you asked that, and I have the answer for you.
You just happen to have the answer?
Well, you know, everybody knows that the lion is the king of beasts, right? But we know that the lion just can't do it alone. I mean, leadership is multidimensional. You need a lot of people in a village in order to make things run. Well, the lion sent out exams and applications for a leader to work with him, and he finally got down to three candidates: Jaguar, Hyena, and the Rabbit. Now, the way that he would decide, he figured, is to have an interview, and the one question he was going to ask all three of these candidates would be, is my breath sweet or is it bad? Now, I don't know if you've noticed this, but lions usually don't go to dentists, and usually their breath is not great. But that was the question that he was going to ask all three candidates. So the Jaguar walks in, and the lion asks, Mr. Jaguar, you are one of the candidates to work with me as assistant king of the beasts. But I must ask you, and you must give me the right answer, is my breath sweet or is it bad? And the Jaguar looks and says, oh, it's terrible, Mr. Lion. And the lion takes a swat at him and says, how dare you insult me? And kills the Jaguar. Well, in walks the Hyena, and the lion asks the Hyena exactly the same thing. Mr. Hyena, you are a candidate, and I must ask you the same question I'm asking the other three. However, it's really down to two. And the question is my breath sweet or is it bad? And the Hyena laughs. It's sweet. How dare you lie to me? And he swats the hyena, and the hyena's dead. In walks the rabbit. Well, Mr. Rabbit, you are a candidate, and I must ask you the same question as I asked the other two, the past two. Is my breath sweet, or is it bad? And the rabbit wiggles his nose. I'm getting my animals mixed up. The rabbit wiggles his nose and says, Mr. Lion, I got to tell you, I've got a really stuffy nose. I got a terrible cold. I can't tell. I can't smell. I just don't know. Well, that's a reasonable response, the lion says. Come back tomorrow when you're feeling better, little rabbit. Okay. Well, the rabbit comes back the next day, and again the lion asks the question, Mr. Rabbit, again. Is my breath sweet, or is it bad? Well, I gotta tell you, I'm still awfully stuffed up. I've been taking nose sprays and all kinds of things like Claritin, and I don't feel well. I just can't smell. As he wiggles his nose, I can't smell. I can't do anything. Oh, well, I have to have a candidate. I must have an assistant. Come back tomorrow.
Okay, I'll try. I will. I'll hope I feel better.
And the rabbit comes back the next day. And again, the same question. Mr. Rabbit, is my breath sweet or is it bad?
Well, you know what I've got? I don't know what I'm going to do here. I have to go to the doctor. I don't know what I'm going to do. I feel so terrible.
Well, I'm frustrated, Mr. Rabbit. I have no one else to help me. You are hired.
Well, thank you very much. You've made the right decision.
And ever since then, rabbits will always know the benefit of wiggling their nose.
Oh. Diplomacy.
That was cute.
So does anyone know where that story came from?
Told my grandson and he loves it.
Yeah, I've heard that story before. I think it comes from somewhere in Africa, but I don't know exactly where.
Yeah. In recent years, it seems as though there's been quite a resurgence in storytelling, and I've got a bunch of experts here. Is that your impression, and if so, why? What have you noticed? I mean, just today, I got an email from the science department at one of the universities, and they're doing a program on storytelling in the Department of Materials Science at Rice University. I mean, if they're doing storytelling, everybody is.
I think storytelling really, really connects us, the points that we have in common in our humanity. It's just extraordinary. You know, even when we listen to people tell their stories on what's your story? Mm-hmm. It's you always have something in common with them.
Yeah.
There's always something in common. So it's like it just connects you naturally. You know, if I go to the moth and you hear people tell the story, just about everybody that tells a story, we either laugh or we cry with them, or so we resonate. And so it connects us all the time, and perhaps it is our way of connecting.
Good answer.
Hey, Warren, I'm sorry to interrupt,
Tatiana.
But we got another donation. You might know this person by the name of Marsha.
Marsha.
So we want to thank her for her very kind donation.
Yeah, thank you, Tatiana. We've got like 30 seconds. Sally, your thoughts about
the resurgence? Well, I just think there's so much that's keeping us apart these days. Storytelling brings us together. So I would agree.
Yeah, I think I call it my church. I mean, it does bring people together and talking about things that are really deeply meaningful. I mean, these stories sound on the surface like silly little children's folk tales, you know, but those folk tales are dealing with very serious subjects, not silly at all. Hank, any other reports before we close off the air?
There's nothing, but I just want to remind everyone that it only takes 90.1 seconds to give us a call at 713-526-5738. Lars has entered the building, so we're moving up real fast. But this was a great program. You guys are great tellers. Warren, this was a great, great show.
Yeah, I feel so fortunate to sit here and just listen to these stories told so well and so authentically. Our guest, my script says our guests have showcased some of the best in Houston storytelling, and that's really true. With your personal and your traditional stories, you've taken us journeys to some scary places, and as promised, you've returned us safely home. Ariana, Sally, thank you for being with us, and so what's your
thank
story?
Thank you for having us.
And please come
very
back.
Honored. Thank you. Thank you.
That's it for tonight, but don't you dare move because, as Hank just said, Lars is already here, and he's got a sweet mix of singer-songwriters on the Tennyson tapes. Make 90.1 a part of every day, and while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling, join us every Thursday at 8 p.m. for So What's Your Story? You treasure what you hear, you keep loving great stories, and we'll keep bringing them to you. This is Warren Holloman, and along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, we never want you to forget that it's never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.